Please silence all electronic devices.
I'm sorry, folks. I don't trust them, and our folks don't trust them.
There is a great deal of overreaction from those who are criticizing this legislation. They will see me in court. You know, if the General Assembly were really trying to do a power grab, there's a lot of things the General Assembly could do, and we weren't.
And they don't have a very good track record there.
Any further discussion or debate?
From the home of the Capitol Press Corps on Jones Street in downtown Raleigh, this is the WUNC Politics Podcast. I'm Jeff Tiberi. After an almost two-week hiatus, state lawmakers returned to the General Assembly this week. It was swearing-in day here in downtown Raleigh on Wednesday, and with the new legislature being seated, there are plenty of new faces roaming the halls. The midterm election marked the end of GOP supermajorities, as well as the end of the tenure of some familiar incumbents. There are now 13 first-time senators and 25 inaugural members in the House. In today's edition of the podcast, you're going to hear from a couple of them, a Republican and a Democrat. First is Senator Jim Bergen, newly elected to serve Harnett, Lee, and parts of Johnston County. He's originally from Tennessee, a two-term county commissioner in Harnett, and has owned his own insurance business for nearly 30 years. Our conversation began with a question about whether he had a welcome to Raleigh moment on Wednesday.
I really like all of the formality and the tradition of stuff. So, you know, it was interesting being in there. I'd been up here before numerous times and got a number of friends that are in the legislature and have come up with different groups, including county commissioners, to walk the halls and talk to people. But sitting out there and going through thinking, hey, now I'm one of 50 that's going to be looking at things and making decisions on things, and the things that we do here are going to impact people all over the state. You look at it and it's very interesting to think about that. Just think about the impact we're going to have on people's lives and their finances and everything they do.
You were a Harnett County Commissioner for 8 years. You obviously ran for that post. You ran for the North Carolina Senate. Your seat is a seat that does tilt to the right. But those are two, I would imagine, kind of different campaigns.
They are.
Tell me how so. What was most different about them?
Well, the running as County Commissioner, there were really only four voting places to go to. Well, there were 25 when I ran for a Senate. So it's, you're covering all of Lee, all of Harnett, and part of Johnston County, the Benson area. So going to trying to be in all those areas, talk to people, get to know people, and name recognition. You know, I mean, I had pretty good name recognition in my area because I live there and work there and have been a commissioner 8 years, but it's real kind of sobering when you go out and nobody knows who you are when you go into, and I shouldn't say that. I've got some really good friends that are county commissioners in Lee County and Johnston County, and I knew a lot of the mayors and 8 years, and I tried to be a very active commissioner. I went to all the meetings. I served on the Association of County Commissioners Board of Directors and was pretty involved in a lot of things and was up here some. I'm vice chair of Central Carolina Community College. Well, that covers Harnett County, Lee County, and Chatham County. So I knew people there.
You're a busy man.
Well, I try to be. I'm a worker. I mean, I don't play golf. I don't, do a lot of stuff like that. I believe in being just very involved in our church and in civic organizations. I'm in the Kiwanis. I'm a member of Crossroads Baptist Church. The community college takes a lot of time, and because right now we're in the process of hiring a new president. We're interviewing for president right now.
Where does that worker bee mentality come from? Was it a parent
or
a grandparent?
My parents. Yeah. My granddad was a farmer, and so that was our first job, was farming. My dad worked, so I've got two older brothers and an older sister. There's four of us, and Mom was a stay-at-home mom until I was about 13, so Dad worked hard. And I remember, hearing him leave in the morning and he'd get home late. And they always instilled in us that if you keep your head down and work, you can succeed, and if it gets tough, work harder. So, you know, and we always knew we were all going to go to college. Yeah. I mean, neither one of them ever went to college, but all four of their kids went to college. And I've got two older brothers that have both been successful. My sister's successful. You know, I try to be successful. Yeah. You know, they also taught us is don't expect anything from the government. You know, don't count on the government. And I don't mean that in a bad way. I don't mean don't expect to be taken care of by the government, to work hard. And they also modeled for us, you know, a servant's heart. I can remember going with Mom when I was a little kid to take groceries to families that had tough times. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't, you know, it was either sickness or something. It was not that. And people have situations in their lives where they do have problems and they need assistance. And I do think the government ought to do that. But for all of us that can work, we need to work, you know, and we need to work hard. We need to take care of our families, and we need to try to help others. You know, I heard a wonderful sermon the other day, and honestly, I got in the car and got into the middle of it, and I didn't ever get the pastor's name. But he said, one of the problems we need to make sure as Christians in today's society is that our success isn't determined by our excess. And what he was saying was, don't govern, don't decide how successful you are by how much you accumulate. And instead, your success ought to be by what you're able to give away. That your success should be in giving. And Ann and I have really tried to do that in the last few years. We've started setting up scholarships like we set up one at Central Carolina Community College. We set up one at University of Tennessee where I went. And we already have one at Campbell Law School. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so I want to spend the rest of my career trying not to govern, trying not to determine and judging my success by what we've accumulated.
Before
if that makes sense.
It does make sense. And, of course, there are about seven different things I want to ask you as a follow-up. The first one, before I forget, hog farm, soybeans, what kind of farm did your...
Cattle farm.
Cattle farm. Okay, mm-hmm. That was going to be...
White face cattle.
Probably my next guess. You don't strike me, and candidly, you and I just met 15 minutes ago, you don't strike me as someone that, health willing, would ever fully retire.
Never.
Never.
Never. Dr. Wiggins, president of Campbell University, told me one time sitting at his house, he said, Jim, everybody always asks me when I'm going to retire. And he said, what I found is that most people that retire stand on the corner and wait for the hearse. And he said, I'll never retire. And he didn't. He ended up dying with cancer. I mean, he got to the point where mm-hmm. he couldn't. But people ask Ann, that's my wife, you know, they've been asking her a lot, am I retiring to come up here and work?
Right.
And she said, no, that's just something else he's going to do.
Why did you decide to make the run for this seat? And obviously you won it. Yeah. Why did you want to become a state legislator?
Being a county, when I ran for county commissioner, and you stop me if we go too long on any of this, but when I was asked numerous times to run for either county commissioner or school board, and I said, as long as my kids are young, I'm not going to do it. So when we've got three kids, they're all millennials now, and when the youngest was a senior in high school, I said, okay, I'll run for county commissioner, but I'll only serve two terms because I just don't think people ought to get in political office and just stay. I think that it's not meant to be like that, and I think we need to approach it like that. So I had a primary, had four people in a primary, and I won. Mm-hmm. And then I had an opponent, and I won. And I've had a primary every time except this one. I've had a primary, and I've won. And the last time I won, I won by like 70-something%. So
and those are four-year terms.
This is a two-year term.
Would you, not to throw you on the spot, but totally throwing you on the spot, would you cap yourself at 8 years here? Or
12 years.
12 years.
Okay. I think that ought to be, I'll go ahead and say it right now, and people might say that's silly to say, but I just don't think people, now I might decide to do something else.
Sure.
And I might decide to do something before that. I'm not saying I'm going to serve 12 years. I might serve six. I might, you know, something might happen, and health-wise, I can't serve. Right. I don't know. Anything could happen. You know, if I'm here, I'm 62, and you know, I don't see me serving more than 12 years. They tried to get me to run for another term because my term was ending, and Senator Rabin was not ready to retire or anything. So they said, well, why don't you run one more term? And I said, no, because it's big to me to finish what you start. And I wasn't going to start a term knowing that in 2 years I was going to get out of it. But kind of what you were asking about why I ran for county commissioner, I saw some things in our county that I was really concerned about, financials, our financial situation. When I went on the board, our fund balance was 8.8%. And at 8%, the state comes in, and, you know, we were already getting a letter from the state saying, hey, what's going on? You know, you all need to get your fund balance up. So after I got on the board, I convinced the other commissioners to pass a resolution that we would get it to 15%. And Davenport, our financial folks, came in and said that it would take us 5 years to do it. Well, we did it in 18 months. Hmm. And then when I left the board at the end of the 8 years, we ended up with about a 23.8% fund balance. And we paid off probably $16 million worth of debt. And we refinanced a lot of stuff that was just needed to be refinanced. It was at a high interest rate. I was able to get it to a very low interest rate. And, you know, I'm a pretty good business guy, so I applaud those business practices. But one of the things I'm most proud about is the day I became chairman, we put our checkbook online so that the taxpayers could see every penny that we spent and what we spent it for.
So your district, you represent Harnett County.
All of Harnett, all of Lee,
and
part of Johnston County, okay. The Benson, greater Benson area.
Okay. You won with, correct me if I'm wrong at any point here, about 60% of the vote. 61% of the vote. On
60.9, whatever.
My goal was
60%.
Okay.
And the night of the election, it was 58% because one precinct had trouble. They had a feeding issue on their machine. And so I was a little disappointed that night. But then the next day, after they counted it, it went to 61. I was happy because that was my goal, was 60%.
That was 2 months and 3 days ago. A little birdie has told me that you've spent some time with council of state members.
Yes. I have two more.
You've met 8 of the 10 council
of
state members?
Yes, and then I'll finish the next two. In fact, I met with Commerce at the governor's office mm-hmm. earlier. And I started calling after the election. We started reaching out, and I said, I want to come meet you. I want you to know who I am. And then I went in to sit down, and every one of them, I've asked the same question. Tell me three things that I could help you that you would like me to work on. Give me three things. And the ones that have served in the House or Senate, I asked them to give me three pieces of advice.
Hmm.
And I did the same thing with the governor this morning at 10:30. He had invited me over, so I met with him at 10:30 this morning, and I asked him for three things, and he gave them to me, and then I asked him for three pieces of advice,
sure.
And he gave that to me.
If you're comfortable sharing, what's one of the pieces of advice the governor gave to you?
I'll let your word be your bond.
That's what he said.
That's what he said.
Okay.
He said, don't, and I mean, we just had a great visit, and I enjoyed talking to him.
What other, I guess, of the, who are the two council state members you have yet to meet with?
Commerce and DOT.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Of the 8 who you have spoken with, which conversation stands out the most and why?
All of them are uniquely, and what we've done is after we meet, I come back, I write a thank you note, I include those three things, so that I said, you know, this is what I came away from the meeting, you know, if this isn't right, clarify, you know, I start off, thank you for the time, and then I list the three things,
mm-hmm.
and we're putting together, we're going to have a whiteboard in my office, and we're putting together books, and then we're going to start doing research on those things, and it's been a lot of the things you would think that you would go in and everybody said, just give me more money, and that's really not what most of them are saying. A lot of them are, we need to fill positions. Secretary Hooks is a great in public safety.
DPS, yeah.
Just really enjoyed talking to him. We spent a lot of time together and saw him over at the governor's mansion a little earlier today. You know, I don't know if you realize this, but we've got thousands of jobs and corrections and stuff open, and I think it was close to 170 highway patrol jobs open. I didn't know that. And
it's more than one per county. I mean,
I know.
Close to two per county.
I know. And you know, he and I talked about it, about how do we do it and what do we do. So I've just about every department has open positions, funded open positions that they're having trouble filling. So if you're listening to me right now, apply with the state government. There's jobs available. Benefits are great. You know, it's a, I think it's a good place to work and you can make a difference. We talked about customer service. I'm a big customer service guy. Our dealerships, we get the highest ratings on our customer service. And I want to become the Chick-fil-A of government. You know, Chick-fil-A to me does a great job. And I've read Mr. Cathy's books and I've, you know, studied what they do. I go and sit in their stores and watch and listen. And if we could turn government into Chick-fil-A and give people extraordinary service, wouldn't it be wonderful? When you go to DMV, if you left smiling and happy and thinking, look, I didn't have to stand in line. There were people out there with tablets taking my order and getting me move on. I want to turn government into something that people enjoy dealing with.
One more topic I want to touch on with you, which is the rural-urban divide, chasm, difference, however you want to classify it.
Opportunity.
I like that.
And here's why. Here's why. And I have, there are three things. If you go to my website or look at my card or anything, jobs in rural North Carolina, and I told the governor this morning, we had this conversation, and I said, my three things, after he told me his three, I said, my three things are jobs in rural North Carolina. I mean, Wake County is booming. Mecklenburg County is booming. Greensboro, you know, the populations are going there. The businesses are going there. And one of the things that, as a commissioner, that I looked into was ag manufacturing. You know, ag is still the number one business in North Carolina. It's $84 billion. The commissioner wants it to get to $100 billion by 2020. Well, we did a study. Our county commissioners did a study for a five-county region. And it was Chatham, Lee, Harnett, Johnston, and Sampson County about ag manufacturing. The average job in Harnett County, I think the average income is like $29,000. The average job in ag manufacturing is almost $44,000. Mm. So I was talking
to the 50% jump.
Talking to the Secretary of Commerce about it earlier over the governor's office, and we hadn't even. I mean, we just his one of his assistants, John White, said. I met him and was talking to him, and he said, well, the secretary's here. Do you want to meet him? I know you're going to be up with us next week, but do you want to meet him? I said, sure, because I'd never met him. So we walked over. Well, we ended up talking for 15 minutes about this. And one of the things in Harnett County that's really interesting right now is they're running natural gas lines between Lillington and Anger, right, which is going to open up that area because one of the things that ag manufacturing wants is they want natural gas. Now, Harnett County's got great water system. We got plenty of available land. We've got a wonderful workforce. We got the community college to do training. But 64% of our workforce is leaving the county every day to go to work. And that's just, I want people to be able to stay home. I want people to be able to stay home and work. I want them to be able to stay home and get their health care. We don't ever need to be doing open heart surgeries in Harnett County. I mean, maybe somewhere way in the future, but I'm not talking about that. But I'm talking about your basic health care. Until recently, we couldn't do cardiac cath on a regular basis in Harnett County. Now we can. Harnett Health has added cardiac cath in Lillington. I served on the state SHIC, which is a certificate of need and all that. We were able to help them get approval for a linear accelerator to do cancer treatments. So that's going to be coming to Harnett County. I want people to be able to get their basic health care locally. And then if you have something major and you need, you need a major surgery on your heart or your brain or something, then, yeah, go to Duke, UNC, Wake, Rex, all of those great hospitals. But let's try to keep it as local as we can.
We're going to leave it there for now. I appreciate the conversation.
Good.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll be right back.
In today's economic climate, there is only one sure bet. The world is changing, and at the speed of light. As technology continues to improve the pace and success of the global marketplace, high-quality information is your most important ally in an increasingly uncertain world. I'm Kai Rizdahl. As the day's events unfold, join us for all the latest financial news and analysis from around the globe, later on Marketplace from American Public Media.
This is the WUNC Politics Podcast. I'm Jeff Tiberi. A new legislature was seated this week here in downtown Raleigh, and you're hearing from a couple of first-time legislators. Wake County Representative Julie Von Hafen ousted longtime incumbent Nelson Dollar, one of the most powerful Republicans in the House, last November. Von Hafen was part of a wave of Democrats who eliminated all of the House Republican incumbents from Wake and Mecklenburg counties. She's a former head of the Wake County PTA, and I began by asking her if she remembered the first time that she had ever stepped foot in the legislature.
I think it was for a PTA advocacy day. Every year, the North Carolina PTA does, you know, advocacy day and invites, you know, members, leaders from all across the state to come, you know, and talk about our legislative priorities, just like many other groups in North Carolina. And I do remember that day and the first time that I came and being upstairs in the auditorium. And I think a couple of representatives probably came and just, you know, introduced themselves. And I just remember how nervous I was, you know, about the whole experience. Right. I'd never done anything like that before. And just, you know, having these meetings and trying to talk to people. And you're thinking, I need to know my facts and figures. And I need to have all my, you know, ducks in a row. Mm-hmm. And it was very intimidating. And I think that, I mean, it did inspire me to want to come back. I remember leaving that day and thinking, okay, that wasn't as scary as I thought it was going to be. You know, the people we met with are just people like you and me, and so it's not that big of a deal. And I think we had some good conversations, and, you know, that just encouraged me to keep going in my advocacy work.
When we came into this room just a few minutes ago and you sat down, you used the word surreal, thinking about today, January 9th of 2019, just juxtaposed to basically a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
How come? Why surreal?
Because a year ago, I had no idea I was going to run for office. I had no idea I would be here, you know, today being sworn in as a member of the General Assembly. You know, my path, I think, was somewhat different than some of the other people that are here, some of the other candidates, you know, that ran last year. And so I think this whole experience, you know, being sworn in, being elected, it's been a whirlwind. And that's why just sitting down there today, being sworn in and doing my first votes, it was very surreal.
Are you proud? Are you inspired? Are you kind of in a state of shock? How would you kind of size it up right now?
Sometimes I'm more in a state of shock that this all happened, but I'm extremely proud to be here. I'm extremely proud of the campaign that I ran. I'm extremely proud that I decided to run for office. I think just making the decision to run for office is a huge accomplishment that I don't think a lot of people get credit for. I have a whole new respect for people who run for office and take that plunge. It's so life-changing. Mm-hmm. Even if you lose, I think it really changes your perspective on yourself or people around you. It's a big undertaking, so I have a huge respect for people that do it.
What's something you learned about yourself in the last 12 months?
That I can do things I never thought I could do, and that I could be out there as a leader. Sometimes I think people sell themselves short, and I think I do that, honestly, a lot. I mean, I had people for years asking me when I was going to run for office, and, you know, I don't know if it's a woman thing. We talk a lot about women running for office and how they have to be asked to run for office 7 times before they really think. That's a proven statistic that women have to be asked a lot more than men do, and because I think we think a lot more about what it's going to mean for our families, what it's going to mean for us, what it's going to mean for the people around us. And, you know, I don't know if men think that same way. And so I think that the one thing I learned, you know, being a candidate and now having this office is that I can do it. And I'm just as qualified, if not more qualified, than a lot of other people that do it.
I'm obviously not a woman. A year ago, we're in about a year into the Trump presidency. The Me Too movement is 4 or 5 months old at that point. I'm wondering if there was a moment where you thought to yourself, I've got to do this. Whether somebody had already asked you 5 or 6 or 13 times to run for public office, if there was a moment where you thought, all right, now it's my turn, now it's my time to do this. Or whether it was a person, whether it was a significant other or a friend or a colleague who said, hey, here's your opportunity. Like, what was it if there was a pivotal moment or person?
Well, I don't know if you know my story of how I got into this race, but I was asked to run for this seat. And so right. I think that before that happened, you know, I'd probably in the back of my mind had some thought like, oh, maybe I'd run for the school board someday, you know, something that was a little bit more within reach in my mind that, you know, I've been out there doing education advocacy. You know, I know a lot about education policy and financing. And so I thought, well, that would be the perfect thing, you know. But then when this opportunity came around, I had a lot of people, of course, you know, calling me, saying you can do this, encouraging me. And I don't think without all those people doing that, I would have really taken it as seriously as I did. I also think that, you know, throughout me being a candidate, I met a lot of other women this year that ran for the House and the Senate, and we became very close, and mm-hmm. we became, I don't want to use the word squad, because that's so, you know, the overused word now, but I do feel like having the support of other women, that we know what we were all going through and could rely on each other, ask each other questions, you know, that mm-hmm. is really important.
So, Julie Von Hafen here on the WNC Politics podcast, just sworn in within the last several hours here at the North Carolina Legislature. I do think contextually it's very important to note that the race you won, it was not an open seat. It was not a seat that had been held by a Democrat for a decade and that Democrat had retired. This was a seat that was held by Nelson Dollar. I believe he was a sixth, I don't have this in front of me, but I believe he was a seven-term, you're correcting me and I appreciate that, a seven-term House member. He was a lead budget writer here in the House. You won by less than 1,000 votes. It cost a lot of money, a lot of, I would imagine, stress and angst and time. I want to ask you about Representative Dollar, but I guess even before I do that, my point being setting this up is this was a hotly contested race. Was there a moment where you thought, oh, shoot, I shouldn't have done this?
Many times, but I don't think it was because of the race.
Okay.
It was because just how hard it was. I mean, I don't know if my race was any harder than any other candidate out there. We were all working extremely hard. I did feel a little bit of more pressure maybe because this was such an important seat for the Democratic Party to flip. And we knew it was within reach to do it. So I worked extremely hard from February to November to honestly like live up to some of those expectations that we were going to do this. And but I had many moments, of course, I think every candidate does that. Sure. You think, what did I get myself into? But I never regretted the decision.
Knowing that you did defeat a seven-term incumbent, how much of the calculus for you right now for the next 2 years is, you know, learning the building, learning the procedures, focusing ahead on policy that is important to you and your constituents, and also glancing over your shoulder, because one would expect that House District 36 will again be competitive and, you know, beginning in a year or so. How much of the calculus, how much of your attention is focused on that?
None right now. I mean, it's so, I've actually honestly enjoyed not doing the campaigning part of it and just kind of settling into the fact that I won. And I already had my first town hall in December, and I had a great turnout. And I think people are excited to have a representative who's, you know, making herself available to them. That was one of my big, you know, campaign promises, because I've lived in District 36 for 13 years. Mm-hmm. And we've never had a town hall in District 36. We didn't have that connection with our representative, and that's one of the main reasons I won. And so I'm just excited to get to know, you know, the people in the community, and I haven't really thought too much about, you know, the campaigning yet.
Sure. You are part of what was a wave in November. There are now no longer any Republicans from Wake or Mecklenburg County, the two most populous counties in the state, in the North Carolina House that are Republicans. All I believe it's 23 of them, 11 from Wake, 12 from Mac, are Democrats. Mm-hmm. What are some of your goals? What do you hope to accomplish as a fresh woman lawmaker, but as somebody who is still in the minority party? What are you trying to get done over the next 2 years?
Yeah, I think for me, personally, right now we haven't gotten our committee assignments. We don't kind of know what we'll be working on formally with our committees yet. But over the last couple months since I was elected, you know, I've already started meeting with different people who've been reaching out and want to, you know, share their priorities and what they're, what they want to see happen. And I know the budget is, of course, like, a you know, the biggest issue coming up, you know, in the long session. And of course, as an education advocate, I would love to see some changes, you know, with education finance and what we pay our teachers and the per pupil spending. And I would like to see a fix to the class size, you know, issue. That was something that I worked on for a long time. And, you know, we did have a small fix to it, but there's still a lot of issues out there that I think people are concerned about. I would like to see some work on that. I think independent redistricting reform is something that you're going to hear a lot about. You know, my district was directly affected. It was part of one of the lawsuits and the decision that came out on the Friday before Election Day, you know, that my district is going to be redrawn. So you mentioned about, you know, the campaigning and stuff right now. I don't even know what my district is going to look like, you know, in 2020. So
what is one issue, and then what's the next layer of it that needs to be done? I mean, if it's teacher pay, is the national average, if it's class size, what is the ratio? Mm-hmm. Take me down one of those paths and just, I guess, go second level for me.
Yeah. For me, I mean, in the campaign, and not just in my campaign, but in a lot of people's campaign, we talked a lot about teacher pay and how we need to raise teacher pay in North Carolina. You know, and I know that you always hear, at least to the national average. Well, you know, I guess that's like a goal that we want to get to. But for me, when I was campaigning, and I talked a lot about that, I just think in North Carolina, we need to bring back just general respect for the teaching profession. And whether that means teacher pay is one issue. But honestly, what I hear from teachers is giving them the resources to be successful. You know, they're not out there to make money. They want to obviously make a living wage. And I'm concerned in North Carolina about our teacher pipeline, because I mean, literally, I would go canvassing and I would go to somebody's door and they would say, oh, my daughter, you know, is in college, you know, to be a teacher. I didn't really want her to do it, but, you know, she has such a passion for it. And it would just break my heart when you hear people that say things like that. And that is a direct result of the policies that have been put in place in North Carolina since 2011, whether it's, you know, teacher pay, whether it's per pupil spending, you know, whether it's these grades that are assigned to schools, which I completely disagree with. You know, there's so many other issues, you know, taking away teacher assistants. I mean, I have children who are in grades in elementary and middle school. So my kids are still in the depths of, you know, their public education. And so it's not just about teacher pay for me. There's a lot of other things. And if we can't get the teacher pay to, or we can't come to an agreement on teacher pay, I think there's other things, smaller things, or just incremental steps that we can do to just bring back that respect.
Last one for me. What are you most looking forward to about this session?
I'm looking forward, I think, just, you know, like I mentioned with the campaign, I mean, I learned to do things that I never thought that I could do, and I don't know what to expect, honestly, as a new lawmaker, as a new legislator. This is all kind of very fuzzy about what's going to be happening next. And sure. So I'm just looking forward to, you know, getting to know everybody. I think building those relationships, you know, with my caucus and the other caucus is really important. And then just, you know, learning the ropes, building relationships outside this building. I think there's a lot of groups who haven't felt heard, you know, in the last few years. And I want to be somebody that they can come to and have an open door. So that's what I'm looking forward to.
Julie Von Hafen, Democrat, Wake County. In the first part of the podcast, you heard from Jim Bergen of Harnett County, a Republican, now in the state Senate. They are two of the 38 lawmakers who are new to the General Assembly this year. Glad to have you back listening to the WUNC Politics Podcast here in 2019. You can subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, and Stitcher. Tell a friend or neighbor about the program as well, and stay up to date as to what is happening with your state government at our website throughout the week, wunc.org. I'm Jeff Tiberi. We'll talk to you again next week.